Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
Next guest is Erin Labasque. Erin is an international educator and author and has been teaching writing for over 25 years. Her clients include business and nonprofit organizations in the U.S. and around the world. Her new book, High Value Writing, Real Strategies for Real World Writing, helps business writers boost their confidence by writing clearly, concisely, and with intention. Empowering others to use their voice with confidence drives her to teach. Since 1998, she's worked with all levels of writers in both businesses and academic settings, helping learners take charge of their writing. In today's remote work environment, we use our writing to both inform and connect. She finds joy in helping others build relationships and convey both information and empathy through clear relational writing. Her classes and presentations are active, engaging, and full of practical examples and often humorous. Welcome to the podcast, Erin.
Well, thank you, Dana. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Yeah, I think all of us educators have those stories because the work gets big, right? Well, I spent my early years teaching high school and then after that college. And I guess in a way it was all in the trenches, right? Because you've got a busy load, 5 sections of classes, whatever it is. But I think many of us know too, sometimes the educational system, you can feel like it puts a little bit of constraint on you in some ways. So what I did to kind of dig out of the trenches I found myself in teaching multiple university sections and different schools was to start teaching as a solo contractor and kind of dig out and think, how can I bring education to people elsewhere, like in their jobs? And so making that switch was a way for me to move from the classroom trenches into a new way to deliver learning.
Mm-hmm. And when you started starting on your own, was that something that took a while to build up business? And was it mostly online or was it in person?
Yeah, at that time it was, I guess I went solo a few years before COVID. So it was a pivot to start trying to build clientele and they were face to face. And then we went remote. It did take some time. I was lucky enough to have had one client I had been working with on the side while I taught college. So at least I kind of understood the expectations that a company or a nonprofit might have for a teacher, an in-house trainer. And so that helped. And I was able to kind of leverage that and start talking to more people about becoming one of their in-house teachers as well.
Okay. So for anybody who might be listening who's interested in kind of becoming that sole contractor, maybe going through an organization sometimes works, or getting clients through word of mouth, would you make that kind of a way to give advice to those who are interested in doing something like that?
Yeah, I mean, the main piece of advice I wish I had known, and maybe you all know more than I do about learning outside of schools, but I really didn't know that many companies and nonprofits have a department called learning and development, and that they have people inside of that department either teaching classes or hiring people to come in and do a session. And I didn't know. I thought school is where you teach. And I've been learning. And so if somebody wanted to make that pivot, you'd want to research the learning and development department of different companies you're looking at and see what needs they might have that they can't cover in-house. And that's where you bring your expertise in.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good suggestion. So let's talk a little bit about school and when people are teaching writing, whether they're teaching English language arts, another language, or just writing through their curriculum. So if a teacher who's listening wants to make purposeful writing choices to connect across cultures, for example, they might have a lot of ELL students. How can they do that in teaching writing to their students?
Well, I think that's a great question, you know, because most of us are teaching a variety of students from a variety of cultures and languages. And with the ESL or ELL population, I think we often focus on the vocabulary, which is super important, of course, But something to also consider would be the way cultural difference might impact what's expected or considered normal in communication and writing too. For example, some cultures might feel like it's okay to be really direct. And I can say, hi, Dana, would you like to talk about an episode? And some might say, no, 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 that's not respectful. You should say, dear Ms., et cetera, and write with a more formal tone. So we kind of have to look at those cultural elements as well as the words themselves, I think, to help our students who are often writing to people who grew up in different cultures from themselves.
Yeah, that's interesting too. Kind of think about like how formal one's writing can be in different cultures, or, you know, looking at who we're writing to as well. A lot of times when we have students write, especially we have them free write or journal, there's a lot of emotional stuff that comes through in their writing. And also for adults, when they're working with people, perhaps even in emails or, you know, just writing of documents that may be seen by others. So how can we use a day-to-day world with real people and relationships and our emotions, but keep it professional, or in terms of students, keep it academic and not let it get too emotional?
Right. It's very hard to balance all of that in today, right? We're trying, I think writing is such a balancing act for people at work. They have to balance being direct and clear, but also friendly. Right. And it's difficult. And for people writing at school, you're often asked to express your opinion, like in that example, or maybe make a persuasive essay or something. But that's not always what's wanted in a graduate program or in a business situation either. So sometimes it's adjusting. How can I have enough emotion to where it's I clearly care about the topic, but it's not personal and I'm not making things subjective? So I usually encourage people to try their best, at least in the workplace, to write in a way that's more objective. And that is where we can bring in the professional. But I think we can really do both, because we can write an objective, concise sentence like, please attend our onboarding session. But I could add some emotion by just saying, please join us for our exciting onboarding program. I can express the same thing in a slightly different way and walk that line between professional and emotional so that I'm both a clear professional and a human being at the same time. Hard balance sometimes in our writing, I think.
No, I get that. How you promote things and, you know, reach out to people also through social media. That's kind of a different aspect of writing as well. And I'm just going to kind of insert kind of what I just thought about with students. You know, maybe they are going from high school to college, but they're also trying to launch something, right? They, whether it be their YouTube channel or maybe they're into fashion and they're trying to get more followers on social media. But how does a young person of around, you know, 18 to 22 do their social media promos in a more professional way instead of just that like language that they're so used to using as a high schooler? If they really want to get, you know, more, I would say, followers that might promote them and pay them for whatever they're doing online.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I have to say, it was our young people who inspired me to go solo, because I saw how entrepreneurial they all are. Like you say, they've got their side hustles and their Instagram businesses. I think for folks, you're dealing with high school or college writing, you're dealing with your YouTube or social media post writing and your work writing potentially to get these other clients. It's always about thinking, who's my audience and what's my goal? And remember to keep in mind that that should change your writing style. It's not true that there's one way to write that's always the right way. It always depends on the situation. And I think we don't always pick that up in school, because when we're in school, we're always in the same situation, school. Sure. But when we get out there, we now have situations with maybe a stranger is reading what we write, or a supervisor is reading it, or a vendor, or somebody we want to ask to support our new YouTube channel with a donation. So we have to always be thinking about being agile and switching into sort of different mindsets depending on our picture of the person on the other side. I think it's easy when we're speaking out loud to adjust our speech depending on another person's facial expression. Sometimes when I'm writing, I literally imagine that person there as if I were talking to them. And if you're writing social media posts and you're used to writing in the way that makes sense for you and your group, but you want to start bringing in other people, then it's time to start tilting the language slightly more formal. So I would continue using concrete words, formal, a little bit more formal, talk about tangible, objective things, and think about what's important to that audience. What are their business goals, and write to that.
Yeah, good advice. Good advice. So, in a lot of high schools, at least when I've worked in high schools, there's a part of the school's unified improvement plan where writing and literacy is a big piece, and they want to incorporate more writing into all subject areas. For example, into, could be math or wood shop even, right? Those subject areas might not be typical areas of writing. So how can writing be a valuable tool to use across a curriculum? If somebody's at a school where the administration would like to see more writing coming from every class.
Right. Great question. And I think WAC writing across the curriculum programs are expanding because everybody's realizing, oh, we actually write about every topic in our real lives. So we should learn about that in every topic. I think if somebody is a woodshop teacher, an engineering teacher, any kind of teacher where you're not thinking it's naturally a fit, what about the business side of whatever it is that the students are learning? So as students are building something in woodshop, what about the business side of if they were going to work in that area, how would they write to potential clients or vendors? And so I think even if we don't want to bring in writing, if it feels artificial, of course, in our teaching, but we can do it in a way I think that's authentic when we think about what would be the context for this skill in the world.
Anybody who like is going off on their own in craftsmanship, or if you're becoming a structural engineer, there's going to be times where you have to write business writing. So yeah, I think that encourages teachers to think outside the box. What about students who are transitioning from high school to post-secondary options? How can they better be prepared to present themselves well in that setting? Let's say maybe a student who is applying to colleges for next year, who's going to be a senior, and they're writing their college, application essay, or they're trying to reach out to people for internships. Maybe they're doing that as they wrap up high school. So how can they get more used to writing in the professional setting, since a lot of what those high schools are used to are just texts and Instagram posts?
Right. I think in high school, we're used to writing in ways that are social or in our personal lives like that. And then when we're in class, we're used to writing for one reason, which is because the teacher said to. And so it's a real big way we have to adapt. And I think we want to do it consciously. When we finish high school, just keep in mind, oh, everything I've written has literally been assigned to me. Probably you have an assignment sheet. Probably your teacher says, how many words, how many quotes, all that stuff. So you don't really have to make those decisions. You just have to show that you can do it. And you also know your teacher wants to see your writing. They're planning to read the whole thing that you turned in. As we get out there to things like a college essay, reaching out to businesses for internships, we have to think, okay, it's not the same reader anymore, and it's not even the same situation. I now have to hope that they read my letter and like it, whereas I knew my teacher would. So we're now in the position of, it's not that we need to be salesy, but we have to start thinking about the other person more than ourselves when we write. And so I think if I were writing to apply for an internship, for example, I would first think, well, what is probably the most important to that person who I'm writing to, and structure my email, bringing it up around their needs more than saying, I'm a new graduate, these are all the things I can do. Try to make it more about what they need, which is just something we don't think about in school because it's always for our teacher.
Yeah, it's kind of like anybody who is applying for a job, who's been in the field, right, of whatever they're applying for, when you write a cover letter, you want to tell them what you can do for them, or how they can benefit basically from what you have to offer, right? It's kind of presenting it that way. How can they benefit? What might their needs be? You might not know applying for a job, but I think for that internship letter for the student, it is finding out what their needs are and writing to that. Good. Also, for employers, how can they educate and support staff through writing training? with clear, plain language. So, you know, you might have a, you know, entry-level staff members who...
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
A certain company feels like needs some training in writing. So how can they do that?
Well, I think it's really important to consider that because many people enter the workforce without feeling confident about their writing. They either never got confident about the school writing they had to do, or they did, but then all of a sudden they're at work and it's a totally different type of writing that's expected. So most people who are entry level are probably nervous thinking, oh shoot, now my boss is going to see my emails. Everyone's going to see my writing.
Yeah.
And so they're potentially really worried about that. So it's a good service to train people so that they don't have that secret fear behind every email they write. And I think there are a number of good ways to do it. The number one is to talk about writing and have a culture where it's okay to talk about our writing and to talk about our mistakes and to talk about how to learn and what works for each other. In some teams, you can even get together and say, hey, we all email each other all day long. What are some tricks we could do in our emails to make them easier for each other to read? What if we all put our main point at the very beginning? That would make it easier for all of us to read every single email we get from each other. So trainings like that, that really think about the realities that new workplace writers are facing and the worries they're facing, and provide, it can be, I often find it most helpful when it's a workshop with a team included where they can talk together about the writing issues. But of course, there are also individual learning options as well. Many companies and nonprofits also include writing in their leadership development programs now for maybe not an entry-level staff, but an entry-level manager, where right. They're suddenly thinking, oh my gosh, I got promoted. Everyone's going to see my writing now. It's good to incorporate writing into that type of training for new leaders and in onboarding for new staff. And most places have an onboarding learning program and may have a leadership program. So if you've already got it, it's just a matter of working in a module on writing.
Yeah. And that's good, like you said, to have people work with people on their team. And, you know, it's not just that one and done. I think a lot of times right. They might bring in a trainer and then say, you know, have them sit and get right. But I think to have ongoing discussions within the team, maybe with the team manager about how they can, you know, improve their writing and communication, because it all boils down to communication, is your point coming across or not, right?
Right. I mean, that's really what we're all working with. Most work relies on other people and communication. Yeah. So We have to ensure mutual understanding in our writing.
So going back to the classroom, teachers often want to model writing with their students. And, you know, in my own teaching and with colleagues, a lot of the time we've used exemplars. Exemplars of what the perfect score or near perfect score would be on a rubric, and, you know, the B score, those types of things. So at different levels of K-12 schooling, how could teachers model writing with their students?
Yeah, great question. I think when we do our rubrics, that's one place where we have that opportunity. When I was in the college system, many of the rubrics, and, you know, in different places, we have more or less control over our rubrics, right? Yeah. But in some, regardless, some rubrics will include things like content, length, ideas, grammar. Most rubrics don't include things like, did the writing have the right reaction on the reader? Did the writing inform the reader clearly? Did the writing make the reader feel motivated and excited? We're not really considering the reader often. And then in most jobs, and even I think in some college and certainly grad school, the reader themselves takes on more importance. So that's something that we can work into our rubrics. A lot of great teachers I know also create scenarios that imitate real life in ways where perhaps your students are on business teams and they write to one another in ways that would happen outside of school as well. So creating those sort of mock experiential learning, I think, are good ways to bring writing in, because in the world now, we write every day. I mean, we don't, Dana and I have met each other through writing, right? Now we're talking, but we set this up through email. That's, our relationships are created through writing right now. So adding that kind of into the rubric and modeling too, I like to think, you know, when I'm in a class and explaining, oh, what decision do I want to do in this email right now or this essay? I always model the two questions, who's going to read it and what's my goal? And teachers can model, okay, well, my goal right now is no longer to inform the reader. It's actually to persuade them. How is that going to change my writing decisions? And more like model the thinking, I think, that goes into writing, that's the hidden part that nobody's talking about, right? We don't realize, but the thinking is really where it's at. And so that's what needs to be modeled. How would I think about this? How would I make the right decision for this piece of writing?
Yeah, that's a big point, making the right decision, thinking about, like, you know, how can you make that come across better to who you're writing to? Good, good. How about students who want to be self-empowered through their writing, writing to various audiences? How can they better gain emotional intelligence and workplace skills through the writing process?
Yeah, great point that as we get into the workplace, we're kind of learning new ways to be emotionally intelligent, how to work in a team, how to work within a hierarchy sometimes. And so to self-empower for that, a couple things. I encourage in my workshops, people to study the people they work with a little bit and learn the values of other people. Like, oh, I have a boss right now who values collaboration. Maybe when I write to them, I should include my ideas about teamwork, and I should remember, oh, that person cares about collaboration. So I'm going to bring up things that relate to me working with others when I share my ideas with that boss. And so that idea, maybe we could call it either relational writing or writing EQ. Who is this human being? What can I figure out about them? And then how can I write in a way that I think they'll probably receive well? We want to analyze things like their generation, their industry, maybe their culture, to see how we all use and interpret words differently. I had a recent class where one group of people said that they were, I'm using their words, quote, older, and that the younger people were the other group. The older people had asked the younger people in the warehouse for green paper for an event with all this colorful paper. Well, they didn't get green paper, they got white paper. And they said, shoot, we asked for green. And they said, yeah, your paper is recycled. It's green. It's sustainable. And so the idea that different people, different cultures, different generations don't even interpret words the same way is something we need on our radar when we're writing to these real human beings who exist within cultures and norms and industries.
Yeah, no, that's a good point with that multi-generational workplace and how, you know, younger generation will interpret the term green differently.
Yeah. Yeah, it can really show up.
Yeah. So what surprises people who are new in the workforce about what they might be expected to know in terms of writing and, you know, experience in writing professionally?
I love that question because almost every single class that happened again yesterday, somebody will say, none of this would have been a problem if I hadn't been raised to write for a word count. And the biggest surprise they get is that in school, of course, we were encouraged through our rubrics to have word counts. And at work, they're realizing nobody wants to read long exposition or description. And so they feel a little blindsided, right? Because they think, oh, I did my best to figure out how to write in this really descriptive, thorough academic manner. And now suddenly nobody wants that. And so they feel surprised. Oh, I thought my skills were going to directly transfer. And they do transfer. For example, in both school or work, you need to make a central point, but they don't transfer in terms of how you want your writing to look, how long it is, what types of language to include. And so I'd say it's mostly the fact that at work, we usually consider briefer better. And at school, we often consider longer better. And that surprises people quite a bit.
Yeah, because people are, like you're saying, maybe writing a persuasive essay, but it has to be 5 paragraphs, right, as opposed to the persuasive email to a client that you want to get the point across pretty quickly, right?
Right. Yeah. And it goes back again to that idea that when you write that 5-paragraph essay, you know your teacher will read it because they asked you to do it and they're going to give you a grade. But if we're writing to a potential client in that example you gave, you know, maybe they don't read the whole thing. We better capture their attention pretty soon and say their point pretty soon because they might be running off to read all their other emails.
What about the role reversal, the reader hosting the writer? How can we be a good host as a reader? Yeah.
A good host. So here's the deal. Anytime we're writing, unless it's a journal, we're writing for somebody else. It took me a long time to realize anytime I write, unless it's my notes or my journal, it is literally not for me. It's for somebody else. So I don't really want to be thinking about what's relevant to me as much as what's relevant to them. And so I like to think of the reader as a host saying, hey, reader, the writer as a host saying, hey, reader, welcome to my document. Let me help you get around. I think we all know what it's like to read an email that has not been prepared in a way that's easy to read. And we have to read as we have to hunt and look for the information we need. And we have to do the work as readers. Best case scenario is the writer does that work. I always tell classes, somebody's going to work with this email. Either the writer's going to work to make it really easy to deal with, or the reader's going to work to find the stuff because it's not easy to deal with. So to be a good host, we would do that work ahead. We would use navigation clues like headings and bullets and references to pictures. We would use moves like putting our main point at the beginning to make sure that they know the context for the document right away. We would always be thinking, just like we would host guests for dinner, we would show them the restroom, we would offer them something to drink. When someone comes to our document, do they know where things are? Do they know how to find the examples? Do they know how to find the call to action? We want to make that as easy as we can, because otherwise they'll be the one doing the work, which might mean that they would stop reading at some point or have a less favorable response to our writing.
Yeah, that's a good point. You might want to make that ready, right, for the client, for the person who's reading it. How can we write clear and actionable emails, for example, when we are trying to get to the point? Because in school, students rarely write about writing for action. So if they're transitioning to the workforce or to a business internship after high school, how can they practice that?
Yeah, really important to think about that, because that's exactly right. Almost everything we turned in school was so that someone could read it, but not so that someone could do something with it. And in work, someone needs to do something with it. They have to act. So I think an email that's clear and actionable can just include 3 easy steps. Your first step is to write 1 sentence that says your main point. And I suggest using the 5 W's. Just jot down notes, who, what, when, where, why. What I need to give my reader all that info, and then put it into a sentence. That's your main point. Now you know, okay, good. I've told my reader why they're even getting the email. Secondly, we'd want to include a call to action sentence that tells the reader their part. So for example, if the main point sentence was, our team will be holding a food drive next month to help folks who are hungry during the pandemic, the call to action would be about how to donate. Donate in the lobby between these dates or something like that. So step 1 was to say your main point. Step 2 was to say, what's the reader's role? Call to action, include a deadline, use a strong verb of what you want the reader to do, donate, help, provide, submit, review, edit, so they know and make sure they know when. And then the 3rd step is actually going to go on top of the email, where I encourage people to do a 2-part subject line. About 2 words on what the topic is, and then a colon, and then about 2 words on what the action is. So for example, food drive, colon, donate this month. I already know what the email is about before I even open it, which is a great way to reduce misunderstandings, because you want your reader already in the right mind frame when they open it up. And if it's already said donate now, you already know, oh, I need to take some action based on this email. So 2-part subject line, main point right away, call to action right after that. Don't leave either of those 2 to the end of the email, because what if the person doesn't get that far? They need to know that stuff right away.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, using those three steps, especially when students aren't really used to those call to action type communications. Well, we talked a lot about empowering students for writing, EQ in writing, and how to be prepared for the workplace in our writing. Out of everything we talked about on the podcast today, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
I really want listeners to remember that there is no one right way to write, and there is no one authority on what's right. The dictionary is not the authority. I'm not the authority. The authority and what's correct depends on the situation every time. And so if Dana and I are emailing, that's one style of writing. If I'm texting a friend, that's another style. And when I'm writing to a new client, that's another. They're all different, but none of them are wrong. So if you are someone who's flexible with your writing, just because somebody said something was wrong doesn't mean it's wrong for the situation you're writing in. So really, it always comes down to the circumstance.
Good point. Where can people connect with you and find you online?
Well, I'm hopping around on a few places lately. I have a YouTube channel. It's High Value Writing. And that's a lot of fun because, of course, you can give comments. You can ask for video topics to be covered. The book is available on Amazon and the other biggies. And then I have a website, highvaluewriting.com, where you can contact me if you'd like to talk about other learning options. I've got self-paced classes on there you can take, or we can talk about setting something up together, customized instead.
Great, great. I will make sure to put those in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure having you on.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here, Dana.
Are you excited that in-person conferences are back? I know I am. In fact, I'm excited to announce that I'll be at the 2022 Teach Better Conference this October 14th through 15th in Akron, Ohio. I'll be recording episodes live, attending sessions, and connecting with a whole bunch of amazing educators. It would be awesome if you could join us. Head over to www.teachbetterconference.com/register and use code OUTOFTHETRENCHES to save $50 off your 2-day registration. I hope to see you next month. Your affiliate code again is OUTOFTHETRENCHES, lowercase, no spaces.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at OutOfTrenchesPC.